you?
We're going to talk Trump tariffs.
Oh, my gosh. We can talk Trump tariffs. We can talk Trump and the whole decision that, well, yesterday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about the fact that apparently she got in some trouble for it, that there had been an agreement done by an arbitrator. And, I mean, give me a break. You can't make this stuff up.
Agreement on arbitrators, I mean, related to tariffs, or is this a different story? I'm sorry.
So the arbitrator basically said that she couldn't
Just a heads up, we have about 15 seconds before I'm going live.
Okay.
Okay. All right. We'll jump in on that, and I've got some other stuff, too, I'm sure we can follow on. So.
Oh, anything I can, you know, I'm pretty up to date.
Okay, wonderful.
950 weather, this is Eric Nilsson. Today will be sunny with a high near 28. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 9. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 32. And Friday night, a 20% chance of snow after midnight with a low around 18. Saturday, a small chance of rain with highs near 38. The 2018 Blue State Ball is Saturday, March 10th at the Blaisdell. A special night for AM950 listeners to celebrate that Minnesota is still a blue state. Confirmed guests now include Tim Walz, Rebecca Otto, and Jacob Fry. VIP admission at 5:30 and general admission at 7. We will see you there.
Hey, it's Mike McEntee here on AM 950, counting down the days to the Blue State Ball. You just heard the promo. Saturday's the big day, the big night, I should say. Hope you're going to join us there. I'm going to be there, and I think most of the staff is going to be there, so it should be a very, very fun night. I wanted to talk about a story, and I want your opinion about this later on the show here, but this just kind of came over here late this afternoon. Apparently, there is a Minnesota lawmaker, Dan Hall, Senator Dan Hall, he's well known for his religious stances on things, who wants the motto, "In God We Trust," to be framed and placed in Minnesota schools. You remember Dan Hall was the guy who infamously was vocal about being against same-sex marriage when the vote came through. Most Republicans didn't say anything, but he was proud that he was voting against it. So he said before that religion is really important in the decisions that he makes, and now he's proposing making this the law of the land in Minnesota. So I will go into details about that a little bit later, but when we do, I'd like to hear from you at 952-946-6205 on this topic, because I think it's worth talking about. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, but I'd like to hear what you think. But the top of our news today, President Donald Trump, he defied opposition from his own party and protests from overseas. And today he signed an order imposing stiff and sweeping new tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. But he sought to soften the impact on America's closest allies with a more flexible plan than originally envisioned. Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News joins us now to talk about that and the other big stories this week in Washington, D.C. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, it's interesting that that Bernie Sanders is actually not completely against it. He's against the way Donald Trump is doing it, but he's not against some kind of tariffs. So that's kind of interesting. However, his own party, as you know, is rabidly against it. And so this is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, now I've heard some Democrats are in support of this. You know, we have the Iron Range here in Minnesota. People, you know, like Representative Rick Nolan, I think it may be in favor of this because it would help the iron industry, the mining industry, allegedly. But a lot of people say that that boat sailed a long, long time ago and they're not coming back.
The problem is that even if China, which is our biggest competitor in this, does what we say, which is dumping steel, which is selling it to the United States or any of its allies or any other country at below what it costs to produce, even if there's a 25% tariff, they can still do that and still wipe out our market.
Now, Trump exempted Canada and Mexico. That's because a lot of people made some noises about that.
Well, he wants to renegotiate NAFTA, and he didn't exempt them forever. He exempted them for a certain amount of days.
Okay. And other allies might get, you know, preferential treatment. Australia, I think he mentioned. But this is, in typical Trump fashion, this is not very well defined and seems to be kind of launching after he has done the tweet about it. I mean, it's just, you know, not at all what we're used to in orderly fashion here from Washington, D.C.
Well, that's right. I mean, I have hosts that tell me, well, he's draining the swamp, he's not doing things in the normal fashion, so you don't like it. No, I mean, the thing is that they have arisen from years of experience, trial and error.
Trump is saying the tariff here, most Americans are not going to notice anything, even if there's, things, the prices on stuff with steel in it go up, and B, if there's retaliation from overseas. Are most people in Washington buying into that argument, or is that just Trump being hopeful?
Well, you know, again, so look, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, which used to be one of the sort of capitals of iron and steel. And I will tell you that, okay, there is an Ohio company that is reopening their steel plant. That's good news for jobs. However, we don't really know what it's going to mean. It's too much to predict at this point.
Republicans obviously lobbied heavily against this. I think 100 Republicans sent a letter to Donald Trump imploring him to drop the tariffs.
They're free traders.
Relations between Trump and the Republicans in Congress are already strained. This is not going to help things at all.
No, this is not going to help things. But listen, I think that Donald Trump does not have the friends in Congress that he thinks he does. And I think that there's going to be some people that are going to run against him in the primaries, and we'll see if they win. I'm not even sure Donald Trump is going to make it to the next 4 years, but we'll see. I know that there's a lot of talk of impeachment. I don't think he's going to be impeached. But I, again, think that there may be some people that run against him that have much more of a traditional Republican kind of viewpoint. And, a year ago, when he got inaugurated, there was the Women's March. And I saw these signs saying, George Bush, I'm sorry for everything I ever said about you.
Miss me yet? I remember that billboard. They should put it up again.
Right.
You mentioned something we were chatting just before the break, and you mentioned something that Sarah Huckabee Sanders said yesterday about arbitration, and you wanted to tell us about that.
Okay, so basically this woman named Stormy Daniels, that's not her real name, but that's the name that she goes by, she
right.
claims she had an affair with Donald Trump. She was paid $130,000 about 2 weeks before the election. She claims that Donald Trump did not sign the agreement, therefore it's invalid. It went to
right.
binding arbitration. She was not permitted to talk about this issue. Her lawyer, however, who hasn't signed, and did say, well, and Trump got most popular vote, of course, which he didn't either.
No.
So he was essentially saying, hey, this is not true. We don't know what's going to happen with this case. However, they did file something to get it listed, and in the filing, it has all of the truth in it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday said, well, there was binding arbitration, which I didn't know about until she talked about it, and neither did a lot of other press people.
So the usual tight-lipped Sarah Huckabee Sanders may have just sunk the ship there with some loose lips.
That's right, and apparently, according to the press reports, and again, you never know what's true and what's not true in Washington, even in the White House, because gossip has always gone on in all the years I've covered it, and you never necessarily know, but apparently Donald Trump was very unhappy with her talking about the arbitration.
I looked through some of those papers, and that he didn't sign, but he had an alias, which was DD. I can't remember what that stood for, but it just
right.
struck me
he did
funny.
Sign with an alias, but he didn't, even his alias did not sign this particular papers with Stormy Daniels.
She obviously wants to tell her story and is probably going to get some money for it when she does. But I saw the other headline I saw on this today is that Trump's lawyer got a restraining order trying to silence her.
That was the binding arbitration that she let go of.
Okay.
That Sarah Huckabee Sanders talked about, yes.
All right. Well, it's kind of amazing that this story, you think of any other administration, this would be blazing headlines, and it's kind of usually buried as item number 3 or 4 on the daily stuff that we deal with here out of Washington, D.C. I mean, I'm just amazed at that.
That is because in Washington, D.C., there is so much going on. There is never a dull moment. I mean, usually in the second year of a presidency, it's kind of ho-hum, okay, you know, occasionally there's a news story maybe once a week. No, there's a news story every single day in Washington.
There's a news story like every 20 minutes, it seems like. I'm exaggerating
right.
only a little bit, but...
I think you're right.
The other story, and we've almost forgotten about this because it was at the beginning of the week, but Sam Nuremberg, you know, who... I don't know if he was drunk or what when he went on the air on all these cable outlets. What's happened to him? What's the fallout with him? Is he going to actually you know, refuse to testify, or what's going to happen?
Well, now he says he's going to testify. Sorry, I'm outside and near. But anyway, he now says he's going to testify. And the fact is that I don't think you've ever had him on air with you, but a former congressman, he was a Republican, one of the 13 Republican House chairs, Bob Ney, went to jail. And after he got out of jail, he started to work for us. And so, and he's recovering alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And, he sent me the clip. He just could not believe. He said the guy was completely drunk when he spoke, and that's clear. And apparently the guy has now gone into some kind of rehab counseling. I don't know whether it's inpatient or outpatient, but we do know that he has gone into some kind of rehab counseling, and that's a good thing because he desperately needed it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's sad when somebody flames out like that in front of the entire world when you do something like that. But boy, if it ends up with him, something good happening, that he gets some counseling, that's awesome news. Speaking of that, any other you know, things happening with the Mueller investigation? I mean, this is kind of all tied up with that.
The question is whether Mueller has enough evidence on anybody to indict anybody, whether Trump would pardon them once he's still president. And he, of course, has a right to pardon anybody on a federal, under federal jurisdiction, not state, but federal. And so the question is whether Mueller has yet enough information on the Russia situation. Now, the Russia situation gets a little more complicated because, as you know, there was a poisoning with some kind of nerve agent. We don't know whether it was VX, which would be the same nerve agent that poisoned Kim Jong-un's brother and killed him. But what we do know is that that somehow Mueller has accumulated enough information on this Russia thing that's very, very interesting. And we don't know what he has. He hasn't shown his cards yet. He hasn't sought indictments in terms of that. So we don't yet know what he's got. But leaks are saying that he's got something.
We just have to keep waiting. That's the hard part. It's like waiting for Christmas, everybody. You know, we want to see what we're getting.
It is waiting for Christmas. And I'll tell you something. It's when this is said and done, I have a feeling that it is going to put Watergate to shame. I really do. No, we don't have anybody meeting in parking lots and giving, you know, deep throat information and all that other kind of stuff. We've modernized our communications. However, I think that we're going to find the connections are much bigger than we thought, because now there was also a meeting, and I'm blocking on the name of the place it was. It's off the coast of Africa. But we do know that Eric Prince, who got in all that trouble with it in Iraq, if you recall, set up a meeting. Now, he claims he didn't know what the meeting was going, what he was going to when he set up the meeting with the Russians. This was after the president was elected, but before he was inaugurated. And so what we know is that Eric Prince did set up a meeting with the Russians, or he was involved in that meeting. We don't know that he was the actual person that set it up. But that has also been making the news and the rounds.
We're speaking with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Attorney General Jeff Sessions made a trip off to California today, this week, and This was pretty like in your face with California, this whole California versus the federal government over immigration. And it's boiling down to, you know, the federal government saying our laws are superior, which is a kind of an odd argument for the Republican Party to be making, you know, that usually argues about states' rights being the thing that you have to pay attention to.
Well, it's the same issue as marijuana. Is it states' rights or is it federal? And what we know is that Jeff Sessions decided to sue the governor, decided to sue the attorney general of the state of California. He filed suit in federal court in Sacramento, which is the capital of California. And so, again, it's the question of states' rights versus versus the rights of other of the federal government. And this is not just on this issue that has now come up in terms of the sanctuary cities, but it's also about marijuana and whether the feds can go and still arrest people for marijuana things. That means that, you know, they can see cameras outside of the stores of marijuana in California or Colorado. California seems to be what's in their crosshairs most likely now.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the fact that all those millions of more voters in California voted for Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump. That has nothing to do with this, I suppose.
It has, of course, as you know, everything to do with it. That's why they're not really going after Colorado on the marijuana laws, but they're going after California.
And, you know, the language around this, I think people keep calling it sanctuary cities. And I wish there was better language or a better way of expressing it, because it's not about providing sanctuary. It's about providing safety to everybody so that all crimes are reported. And when people start saying sanctuary cities, I think our former mayor, Minneapolis mayor, R.T. Ryback, put it best. He said, this is about safety. When you say sanctuary, it frames it the wrong way. It puts it in a way that people are thinking that crimes are being committed, when the problem is that, you know, crimes are being committed against, you know, immigrants, and they are resistant to report it unless they can trust the police. This is a trust building thing, and it seems like the federal government just wants to mess with that.
Well, one of the mayors, and I don't remember which one, a female mayor from Northern California, got into some trouble because she warned people that ICE was going to come to their places of work, and so they didn't show up at work or whatever that day, and she got into trouble because she warned people. Well, warning people that they may get arrested, that's a bad thing? Give me a break.
Yeah,
or
Jeff
deported.
Sessions, I think he said, how dare you? And like, man, words fail me. Words fail me when we get into situations like this, because this is about basic humanity as opposed to, trying to be a dictatorship, which is kind of what we're running into here. So, Ellen, we got to run, but I appreciate you checking in with us today. We'll check in with you next week.
You got it.
That's Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Now, I mentioned this at the top of the show. I'm going to ask you again about this, and we'll take phone calls after the break. Should the motto, In God We Trust, be framed and placed in Minnesota schools? I'm asking you because a Minnesota lawmaker, Senator Dan Hall, who has religious reasons for wanting it, has proposed making that the law in Minnesota. I'm going to have more on the story in just a minute, but I want to hear what you have to say. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. 952-946-6205. Open phones here to talk about this and other things. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Mike McEntee Show.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 1994, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Find your place in a community you'll love at the Parade of Homes. On now. Go green with the Green Path Energy Efficiency Tour, sponsored by Xcel Energy. Get your free guidebook at Holiday and online at paradeofhomes.org. Sponsored by U.S. Bank.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I have seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. In God We Trust, you read it on your money. It was in 1956, a joint resolution passed by Congress and approved by President Eisenhower made it the nation's official motto. The question is, should it be placed and framed in front of school children here in Minnesota? Minnesota lawmakers could find themselves soon debating that. A bill introduced today would require school boards to post, quote, a durable poster or framed copy of the motto, In God We Trust, in every school building. Administrators could solicit private dollars to do it. This is all the brainchild of State Senator Dan Hall. He's a Republican from Burnsville. He is a chaplain and a former Christian school principal. He says it's as much about American history as it is religion. We've heard that about the Civil War paintings down at the Capitol, too. Now, remember, Hall voted against the same-sex marriage bill because he wanted not to be on the right side of history, because he wanted to be on the right side of eternity. And he was proud of that vote, which was motivated by his religion, and that's what's motivating him here, too. He says, this is in God we trust. It's not in Jesus we trust or Muhammad we trust. He says, it's in God we trust. And I think it's time we do some of those things and encourage the people of faith. But he says there are other motivations as well. Quote, it feels like there is a movement that is anti-faith, and people don't always understand the dynamics between church and state. They think it's supposed to be completely separate, and yet our founding fathers found it was never separate. Really? I don't think that's quite the idea, but not everybody's buying that. I'm going to get into some of the reaction, but I want to hear what you have to say. 952-946-6205. Astrid in Minneapolis wants to chat about this. Hi, Astrid. What's your thoughts?
Yes, hi. Well, I think if you want to start a war in Minnesota, just put that up, and then in every school. How disgusting. I was a teacher, and I think you have, you know, I belong to the American Civil Liberties Union, and mm-hmm. I would start to give them a lot of money to fight this. I think it's outrageous. And this is why I belong to the American Civil Liberties Union, because of dangerous ideas like this. And the reason people came to this country and went all the way across the ocean, oh, that's a terrible thing to do to people. That they came to this country because they wanted the right to believe in God or not believe in God. And I think it's just disgusting that you want to have start a war about God. Maybe people like to believe in God, and that's their right. And it's your right not to believe in God if you don't want to, and to be respected for it. So I wanted to say that.
Okay. You know,
people get on the air that belong to the American Civil Liberties Union.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with your line of reasoning here, but, you know, Dan Hall is saying this is not about any particular reason. It's just that, you know, this is our national motto and this is about history. We should celebrate history. Are you buying that when he says that? Oh, I see we lost Astrid. Okay, but I don't know. Are you buying that? Are you buying that? 952-946-6205 if you want to weigh in. Other people aren't. August Berkshire, who is on the board of Minnesota Atheists, said his group would likely mobilize to oppose the bill if it gets a hearing. Quote, it violates the separation of church and state by making it look like the school takes on an official position on whether God exists. Now, the bill here was referred to the Senate Education Committee for consideration. A House companion bill has yet to be introduced. And since we're talking about bills that are being introduced out the legislature, there was a bill authored by State Representative Ilhan Omar, DFL Minneapolis, and State Senator Sandy Pappas today that would eliminate the statute of limitations for criminal sexual conduct and sex trafficking. Representative Omar said she was motivated to author the bill after meeting survivors of sexual violence and after hearing about how the limitations within the criminal justice system can lead to re-victimization and a feeling of helplessness. The Me Too movement has paved the way for many survivors of sexual violence to share their stories, as Representative Omar, and she wants to ensure survivors of sexual violence feel supported and would now have the choice to come forward and report acts of sexual conduct at any time. Caroline Palmer with the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault explains why getting rid of the statute of limitations is needed in this, you know, for this crime of sexual assault.
And this opportunity now to remove the statute of limitations recognizes that survivors need the opportunity to go through this process on their own time. Trauma has no timeline. And so it's very, very important that we set up a judicial system that is ready to respond to them. And as was mentioned earlier, we're not losing due process. We're not losing the rights. But what we are gaining here is an opportunity for more justice for survivors.
Now, if passed by the House and Senate, the bill would take effect and apply to acts of sexual violence and sex trafficking committed on or after August 1st, 2018. So for people who have already suffered through this, it would not help them. It can't be retroactive. I mean, that's the way the law works. You can't go back and change something if the statute of limitations has expired. You can't unexpire it. But going forward, there would be no statute of limitations on something like this. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about 8th Congressional District politics because it is a massive field of people seeking Rick Nolan's seat now that he isn't running. We'll talk to the guy who ran Rick Nolan's last campaign, who is, guess what, a candidate this time around. That's all next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. How do you choose an automotive repair shop? I bet you look for quality and dependability. You want someone you can trust to do the job right the first time. It saves you money and hassle because you're not coming back over and over again. My team of top-notch automotive specialists knows vehicles inside and out, and I guarantee it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Hi, Matt McNeil, and I'm very excited about the Blue State Ball coming up this Saturday at the Blaisdell in Minneapolis. You can get tickets at am950radio.com. A lot of special guests. Tom Hartman's going to be there, Norman Goldman, Mike McEntee, of course, Jacob Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis, Rebecca Otto running for the DFL nomination for governor, and now Congressman Tim Walz is going to be there as well. Get your tickets at am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com, and join us for the Blue State Ball on Saturday night.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know that Better Energy is finally affordable. With All Energy Solar, Minnesota's number one local home solar provider, you can go solar with little or no money down. Qualified property owners could even see a return on investment in less than 1 year. Xcel Energy's Solar Rewards Incentive Program is available first come, first serve, and federal tax credits are available for a very limited time. Schedule your free solar assessment today. Visit allenergysolar.com. That's allenergysolar.com.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie, And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. Joe Radinovich knows how tough it can be to win in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District. He was Representative Rick Nolan's campaign manager in 2016 when the Democrat won despite Donald Trump winning the district by a large margin. Now, with Nolan not running for re-election, Radinovich is seeking his old boss's seat in a very crowded DFL field, and he joins us right now on the program. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you? I think you probably know, but I know how difficult it is to win Minneapolis, too.
Yes. You just took a job as Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey's chief of staff after running his campaign, and you just quit it so you could run for this seat. So I guess the decision by Nolan had to be a surprise to you.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise to me. Rick had called me that morning before the release went out. He and I have obviously been close over the years. I represented the area that he lived in when I was a state legislator in Crow Wing and Aiken County. And of course I ran that 2016 races, which is, as you had mentioned, was very competitive. So I was saddened by his call. It wasn't the news I was expecting to hear, but he encouraged me to consider a run, and it took me a few days to kind of think my way through it. But it's too important of a race not to join in, and I think that the issues that we have an opportunity to talk about are too important to the Democratic coalition to not take this opportunity.
Well, let's talk about the issues, because that's where we are right now. This is a campaign that is first going to be decided by DFL delegates in a convention, and may get decided in a primary after that. A lot of issues come up, and one of the big issues in the 8th Congressional District, which seems to just divide the DFL, is mining versus the environment. Where do you stand on that? And I don't know if it is mining versus the environment, but it's certainly a schism in the party.
Yeah, it is a schism in the party, and I think it's a false choice pushed at Democrats by often Republicans. And, you know, my position on that issue is that as Democrats, I think we should believe in science. I think that we need to have a clear science-based process with high standards that, accounts for other resources in the area, and that if there is a project that's approved for these minerals, it needs to be done so in such a way that there is a financial contingency set aside to ensure that the cleanup can be done after the life of the project and even after the life of the company. And if there's one approved, we need to have close oversight during the construction operation of the mine to make sure that it was done as they said it was done and done as it was approved by regulators. But, Mike, that's actually the most important issue, I think, facing Democrats, especially in rural America, is kind of at the heart of this division that we have, too. And that issue, I think, is the displacement of people, working people, through mechanization and technology. And I use the example on the Iron Range that in 1980, there were 39 million tons of iron ore mined from the ground, and it took about 14,500 miners. In 2015, you could have taken that same 39 million tons of iron ore from the ground at full production, and it would have taken 4,500 miners. And that situation is playing out on our farms and in our factories. And with the coming of driverless cars, entire industries are going to be displaced. And it's that disruption to the economy that's really created a lot of problems for working people. You know, it used to be at that time that people could come out of high school and work in the mines or on the farms and make sure that they could care for themselves and the people around them. And as we deal with that changing economy, there's an anxiety in workers that I think Democrats have to be able to offer solutions to in order to win in places like the 8th District.
And I agree with you. And I think those mining jobs aren't going to come back. The mechanization is going to go forward. And I think you're dealing with two ends of the spectrum here. You have people who probably can prepare for the jobs of the future. And then you have people who are in their 50s and 60s who are looking forward towards retirement and suddenly find themselves out of work and can't do anything. And retraining at that stage in your life is not exactly easy. I think you're talking about different solutions here when you're looking at that whole spectrum. How do you approach something like that?
Yeah, for me, I think that number one, people where I come from aren't looking for a handout as the economy changes. What they're looking for is government to understand the problems that they're dealing with. And so what I see for folks on the younger end of the spectrum, people my age, younger, are dealing with, number one, issues around childcare. Childcare has become so expensive that oftentimes people are left to decide whether both parents can afford to work or whether it's more efficient for one to stay home and take care of the children. That's not an optimal situation. That puts people in a position where they're not choosing from their best options. So I think that we need to do more. I was a co-author on the all-day kindergarten passage when I was in the state legislature. I think we need to do more to expand scholarships and opportunity for kids in the pre-K, at the pre-K level. Another thing, you mentioned retraining and training. I think that community colleges and technical colleges are especially well positioned to be able to help people do that. So if you're coming out of high school, it's a community college or a technical college in the area that's especially attuned to what the local economic demand is. And so where I come from in the Crosby area, there's Central Lakes College in Brainerd, and they've been able to pair with St. Scholastica to create a four-year nursing program to address the shortage of nurses in that area. And so it's that flexibility and that adaptability that becomes very important. For those folks who are towards the end of their career, number one, as we've seen with the Republican tax bill that was passed, Paul Ryan came out today and he chalked up the projected deficit to what he calls entitlement programs. And so I think that we, number one, need to protect what we have with Social Security and Medicare, but we also, for future generations, need to expand that. And so I believe in universal single-payer health care, which is a prime concern of people who are both young and aging, and it allows people to decouple work from their ability to have health care. And so I think that allows for more flexibility and movability in the economy as well. But we also need to make sure, and this has been an issue for especially the Teamsters lately, that where there have been pensions and where there are problems with these pensions, we need to do more as a government to either help supplement, shortages or make sure that there are programs that people can rely on. And in the Teamsters case, and I don't want to go too long here, but in the case of the Teamsters, for years, these folks had bargained in good faith and the workers kept their end up in terms of meeting the obligations to the pension, but companies were allowed to defer their obligations. And in many cases, the companies went out of business or, folded up before they had made good on their obligations. And so there are massive shortfalls there. We don't want to see that happen with the Teamsters or anybody else.
Yeah, and we're seeing that, I think, even in the public sector unions, that there are reduced expectations of what pensions are going to put out. And there's bills in the legislature right now. I just went to a hearing this last week where I heard some pretty incredible stories about people who were expecting to retire, and now it doesn't look like they can because of the reduced amount of money that's going to be coming out of these pensions. So that is a big, big problem that's looming on many, many different levels for us.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I've known some folks who were Teamsters who, had proposed that their pensions would be cut in half or by a third. And I approach this from, if you step back at the macro level, we live in the richest nation the world has ever known. And it's provided a lot of opportunity and a lot of benefit for people. But what we know is happening is that while the gross domestic product is going up and while the stock market is soaring, not everybody is sharing in the gains. And we just from a simple perception of fairness, we know that if the money were more evenly divided, that working people would be able to take care of themselves and they'd have more freedom to make the decisions that they know are best for themselves and their family. And so I don't buy this excuse by a lot of people that there's a scarcity of resources in this country. It's simply that, there's been an uneven distribution of it. And while gains have been seen, the slice of the pie that's belonged to workers has been diminishing.
I want to bring you back. You mentioned your term in the House, and you had one term in the House and you had one vote, I think, that probably cost you your last election, your re-election. And I want to know if you want to talk, can you talk about that vote and what you've thought about it since and what people have said to you?
Yeah. You know, that vote is, I've thought about it a lot. I've talked about it a lot. It means a lot to me. And that vote was obviously the vote for marriage equality. And, you know, there's a lot of stories that I could tell about this, but part of my life and part of my narrative, and even now part of my stump speech, it hasn't been easy, but this is something I talk about because it's very important to me. But, you know, I dealt with a lot of tragedy in my early life. In high school, you know, suicide and you know, an attempt at suicide by a very close family member of mine while I was there at the house, you know, was something I dealt with my junior year. And the following year, I lost my mother in a murder-suicide. And wow. When I was at my worst and needed the most help, I had people around me who were there for me. And some of those people, most of them were teachers, but some of those teachers themselves were gay, and they had been in the closet their entire career because of what a fear of coming out would do to them. And so when I was elected to the legislature in 2012, that election in 2012 had the marriage amendment on the ballot. 62.5% of my district voted to define marriage as between a man and a woman. And when the dust cleared on the election and we knew that we had the Democratic House and the Democratic Senate and Governor Dayton in office, we knew that this question would be coming to us. And, you know, I advocated first in the caucus and then publicly that we should pass marriage equality. And the reason I did is because, number one, I believe that people who, you know, would seek to discriminate against others shouldn't, and people who don't feel comfortable, you know, telling others who they are, shouldn't find their justification for that in our laws. And in a very real and acute way, in the lead up to that vote, in the year or two prior to that, there were some really high profile suicides by especially young gay men in Anoka High School. There was Tyler Clementi out at Rutgers University. And at the time, there was a story written that said that young gay men were 6 times more likely to commit themselves, or to kill themselves rather, than someone like me, a straight man in that same age group. And I just couldn't, knowing that that was the case and knowing that it was linked to a law that I had the ability to participate in changing, I knew that if I didn't, or if we passed on that opportunity, then I would have felt I was complicit in prolonging an injustice. And so I advocated for that. I supported it. And when I came out publicly in support of it, the Republicans in my district first tried to recall me and weren't able to do that. And then they were able to beat me narrowly in that November election. But I do want to say that, you know, while it made things more difficult for me in my election, it was the right decision. And it made me feel good about my term in the House. And so when I went out through that 14 election, I knocked more doors than any other House Democrat that year. And I also raised more money than anybody who wasn't self-funding because, number one, I wanted to win that seat again because it was so important to be able to do the things that we could do then. But also, I mean, it gave me a sense of pride in my service, and I don't regret that at all.
We're speaking with Joe Radinovich, who's running for the 8th Congressional District on the DFL side. It is a crowded field right now. There are 4 other candidates, at least, who have announced. I'm going to run through the names here because I got to make sure we mention everybody. Kirsten Hagan Kennedy, who is a mayor up there on the range. Michelle Lee, who is a former TV anchor. Lee Pfeiffer, who is an activist. And Jason Metza, who is a current representative. And I was watching a hearing today that Jason Metza was speaking at, and it was about the wild rice bill. This is about water quality, and he's supporting that. He's supporting making changes in it, and a lot of environmentalists are against that. Where are you on that issue?
You know, I didn't follow today's proceedings, but I think the bill was actually introduced in the House by the guy who beat me in election in 2014, Dale Lewick. But
it was.
Yeah. So we, again, you know, these issues of the false choice between the environment and jobs is something that continually gets driven at us as a wedge. Now, I support a science-based process, and I support, you know, the appropriate review here. I do think that there have been some questions about the particular science in a specific study done in northern Minnesota about the level of sulfates in the water relative to iron content. And so the question really has to do with wild rice. And all of us want wild rice to grow and thrive in our lakes and rivers, and that's why we should seek to improve water quality up north and across the state, especially where wild rice is concerned. But there are some questions, I think, specifically about what whether those sulfates activate in such a way that the wild rice seedling, I think it is diminished in the presence of iron. And so, you know, I'd like to see more science reviewed on that, and I'd like to, you know, kind of participate in the conversation from there. So I don't know the specifics of the bill that was introduced today. I just was told about it briefly when I was on the way up here.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. But my point here, my bigger point was that this is a crowded field. We've got four of the candidates. A lot of people are expecting that nobody's going to get the endorsement in the convention coming up here. I think you have to get 60%, if I'm correct, to get the endorsement and the from the DFL. With that many candidates splitting the vote, it's not likely. What are you focusing on right now? Are you focusing on those delegates and the DFL endorsement, or are you looking beyond that and saying, hey, we're going to have to run a primary race here?
Yeah, so I'm seeking the endorsement. I intend to abide by it. I've always been a party activist. That's kind of how I came up through the system here. I came out to caucus in 2008 like a lot of people did, and I started raising my hand when they asked if people wanted to participate and help out, and that was something I was interested in. And so I valued the time that these activists are putting into this. I value their judgment, and I think the best way to have a unified party is for all of the folks involved to respect the endorsement outcome. Now, I don't know what the other candidates are planning to do, but I do know that I spend a lot of my day, number one, you know, like everybody else, raising the money necessary to continue this campaign, but number two, talking to delegates across the district. And I think that, you know, despite getting in after the caucus, which is when I announced my entry in the race, I think that there's a good chance that I could earn an endorsement here. And I'm in Malacca, Minnesota right now, sitting outside of a senior center because we've got a meet and greet here in a few minutes. And I'm going to go in and talk to those delegates about the issues that are important to them and see how we do. But for me, this race is really about a couple things. One is about why I think it's important. I talked about that, the changing economy. And number two, I think it's also important that we have somebody who can win. And I think winning in the 8th district, which is a district that Donald Trump won by 16 points, means holding the coalition together and going the extra mile to make sure that I'm listening to the concerns of people who may not agree with me on every issue, but I also want to talk to them about what a path to victory looks like in this race so that we can have somebody in Washington, D.C. who is broadly representing Democratic interests and is fighting on behalf of working people.
I got to ask you one more question before you head in, and I know you got to run to that, but Representative Rick Nolan, every time I talk to him, his biggest complaint about his second go-through in Congress was having to raise money, having to spend so much time raising money that he didn't get enough time to focus on actually, you know, doing the work he wanted to. Do you have the stomach for doing that kind of fundraising, and are you planning to do anything about getting money out of politics?
Yeah, so let me be first very clear. I support broadly Rick Nolan's major initiatives, which were always about protecting and expanding Social Security and Medicare and fighting for working people. But the third always was ending the corrupting influence of money in our political system. And he had a unique position to talk about that because he had served previously and then came back later. And I think that he probably thinks, as I do, that our political system or the way we do politics is really the root problem here. And so, you know, it would be my intent to pick up where Rick left off and to support the move to amend and end to Citizens United. I think that the best way to probably get to a place where we're happy or more happy anyway with the type of elections we have is to have a constitutional amendment addressing these very real concerns. Without a change in the court, there's probably no real way to make the type of change that we need otherwise. However, unfortunately, this is definitely not going to happen before 2018. And so I'm doing what every candidate who, you know, should hope to win is, which is I'm spending time on the phone trying to raise money. And it's not very fun. And I would say that the real issue with it for your listeners, in my opinion, is not so much that there's a quid pro quo relationship, but it's about access. And so if I spend all day on the phone talking to people who can help me with the campaign, certainly I appreciate their contributions. But a person who can write a $2,700 check to a candidate or a $5,400 check to a candidate doesn't typically have a lot of the same concerns as the people back home where I'm from, you know, where my folks are, my dad's an electrician, brother's electricians. You know, for them, a $50 contribution is a meaningful contribution in a political race, and it's a demonstration of their clear and earnest intent to support somebody who they know believes in their values. And that's really what this is about for me. It's about the grassroots and about the people who most need an advocate in Washington. So I don't like that part of the job, but until it changes, I'm going to spend my time doing as much as I need to in order to win and take those values that I have and that people back home have to Washington, D.C.
Joe Radinovich is a candidate for the DFL endorsement in the 8th Congressional District. He's been very kind to spend some of his time with us today. Joe, go off to your next event, but thank you so much for talking with us.
I appreciate it, Mike. Take care.
Take care. Okay, coming back here in a few minutes, folks, we're going to talk about a $139,000 door. This isn't the military we're talking about. We'll tell you what it is next here on the Mike McEntee Show.
Oh, let you go.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Parents, if your child's behavior has changed dramatically, shows excessive fatigue, or has fallen sharply in their schoolwork, talk with your youngster. These are often signs of drug or alcohol abuse. A good suggestion from Jason Smith with Prudential, your financial professional who can evaluate your current financial needs and help you develop a strategy to reach your goals. Learn more when you log on at prudential.com/us/Jason Smith.
I'm Adam Jennings, and I approve this message. Some people say weapons don't kill people, people kill people. But if that were the case, then we wouldn't care if North Korea had nukes, would we? You ever think about that? Let's get real. Each year, gun violence hurts nearly 50,000 Americans, including 4,000 kids. And while some politicians act like tough guys, they're too chicken to stand up to the NRA, who gave Eric Paulson an A-plus rating, along with a check for $20,000. He's working for them, not us. I think any congressman who has an A-plus rating from the NRA has the blood of these children on their hands. NRA, give me an F, because I believe in fighting for kids, not cash. I believe our politicians should show the same courage as the kids, teachers, and first responders showed at Parkland, Sandy Hook, and countless others. It's time for a Congress that fights and runs towards danger and not away from it. Join me at JenningsForCongress.com. Thank you.
Paid for by Adam Jennings for Congress.
Minnesota's most respected builders and remodelers choose Warner Stellion to be their appliance specialist, and you should too. When you visit the remarkable homes in this year's tour, you'll love the incredible new appliances throughout. Visit WarnerStellion.com to learn more, including the Warner Stellion store nearest you.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. How much money did you spend on that new door for your house? Well, mine's 25 years old, and I haven't replaced it yet because spending, it looks like about $1,000 to get a very nice door, and you know everything that goes on the outside seemed like a lot. I'll probably do it at some point. So this next story kind of resonated with me. Records show that the Interior Department spent nearly $139,000 last year for construction at the agency that was labeled on a work order as Secretary's Door. And I don't think this is the outside door. I think this is the office door. A spokeswoman for the Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke, did not provide any answers today to questions about whether changes had been made to a door in the Secretary's office. You remember we just did a bunch of stories here about Ryan Zinke and all the problems at the Interior Department and what he's trying to do. Records show the Maryland contractor that performed the work, Conquest Solutions, had done several renovation projects at federal buildings, and a man who answered the phone at the company today hung up when a reporter asked about Zinke's office. Zinke is one of several Trump cabinet officers under scrutiny for questionable spending. This isn't the first time. He spent $53,000 on three helicopter trips last year, including one to go on a horseback ride with Vice President Mike Pence. My helicopter rides don't cost that much money. I don't take helicopter rides. I don't think you do either. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about deferred action for childhood arrivals. Now, ever since Donald Trump said he was ending the program, the kids who are brought here illegally by their parents have been in limbo. The courts have temporarily prevented DACA from ending. So what are these dreamers doing while they wait for a decision? We're going to talk with Nestor Gomez, who is organizing other dreamers to fight back. Also tomorrow on the show, when you go to the doctor and that your doctor prescribes you an addictive opioid drug, what should you do? How do you even know it's an opioid? We'll talk to a doctor about how to talk to your doctor. And then, since we were talking just a few minutes ago to Joe Rudinovich, we're going to speak to one of his opponents who's moving from TV news to politics. We'll talk with former Duluth TV anchor Michelle Lee about her run for Congress in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District. That's it for today's show. Mom, thanks for listening. Get those tickets to the Blue State Ball. You got to buy them quickly before they're gone online. See you tomorrow.
Guess who called me the other day? You did.